My next guest grew up in this city, graduated from Yale and the University of Michigan Medical School. That's not bad for openers. He is the director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins University and Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. He's written another book. Other than that, he hasn't done much. He's also kept his given name, I believe. It's a pleasure to welcome award-winning author Dr. Ben Carson. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Always nice to be back in Detroit.
Welcome back to your hometown.
Thank you.
You grew up here in opulence, did you not, Dr. Carson?
That would probably be quite an overstatement. Things were certainly not good for us growing up, but I have to attribute a lot of credit to my mother, who only had a third grade education but had a tremendous desire to control her own destiny and ours. And if that meant working three jobs at a time as a domestic, then that's what she did.
Yeah, she certainly must be proud of her son. I'm sure she is. You just heard me talking about Malcolm X, a great black leader who was assassinated probably before you were born or when you were a baby, anyway.
I knew what was going on.
Is Malcolm X's memory revered among the black community?
I don't think it's revered among the present generation. Probably the generation before that it was revered. But as you well know, our young people nowadays don't really spend a lot of time worrying about history, be they black or be they white, which is really an unfortunate thing because I think we lose a lot by not paying attention to what has gone on before.
Well, but of course, Dr. Martin Luther King, who has been memorialized so often and so well to now where he has, you know, there is a holiday to commemorate his life and times, he certainly is known to this generation.
Right. Martin Luther King, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, there's certain names that everybody knows about, although I would be bold enough to say that many of our young people couldn't tell you much more about them than their names.
Interesting. I don't want to dwell on politics because you have a very positive message to give, but you heard me talking to Bruce Perry.
Yes.
Who's written this book about Malcolm X, saying that he believes the majority of newborn blacks in America today have Islamic names or African names. Is that true?
No.
I didn't think it's true either.
There are a lot who do, but by no means the majority. Certainly not the ones I see.
Well, and you see kids, you see young kids of all stripes.
Absolutely.
What is a pediatric neurosurgeon doing writing a book of inspiration, a think big, you can do whatever you want to do sort of mind-expanding book?
Well, that's a good question to ask of any neurosurgeon because generally neurosurgeons are incredibly busy people. And I would dare say that I am probably busier than most. But I have, I guess, been placed in a position that's relatively unique in the sense of coming from a situation of severe poverty, coming from a broken home, a member of a racial minority, terrible grades, horrible temper. Many of the things...
Terrible grades?
Oh, I was the worst student in my fifth grade class. No competition.
How did you ever get to Yale?
Well, there was a metamorphosis that occurred. It was, again, secondary to my mother, who felt, after praying to God for wisdom, that the thing to do was to turn off the TV set. And she allowed my brother and myself to watch only 2 to 3 TV programs during the week. And with all the spare time, we had to read 2 books from the Detroit Public Library each week and submit to her book reports, which she could not read, but we didn't know that. And in the process of that, we developed a joy for reading and subsequently turned our academic lives around significantly. She, in fact, after my brother and I had turned ourselves around, taught herself to read, got her GED, went on to college, and became an interior decorator.
Incredible. What is your brother doing?
He's an engineer for the Bendix Corporation, designs the aircraft brakes for systems like the F-15 fighter.
Okay. It's coming now, isn't it? Are you telling us that, look, if my brother and I can come from abject poverty, from nothing, to the kinds of positions we enjoy today, that almost anyone can do it? Is that what Think Big means?
That's each one of those letters means something special, but the key point that needs to be made is that inside of each of us, we have that kind of potential. When I was in the fifth grade, my expectation was to get the lowest score on any test, and I generally did. By the time I was in the seventh grade, after starting this reading program, I always expected to get the top grade, and I generally did. And I didn't have a brain transplant in the interim. The thing that changed was basically my concept of what I was able to do. And as I started reading, you know, I found that even though we had no money, I could travel to Africa or Asia or Sweden or any place I wanted to go. I could meet anybody. I could do anything, and it cost me nothing. And I began to broaden my perspectives.
You mean through the books?
Through the books. Yeah. And consequently, I no longer saw myself as a little factor in Southwest Detroit. I saw myself as a part of the world puzzle, as a part of the world scene. And it just started to broaden my horizons and increase my perspective. And then I began to think, hey, yes, I'm poor. Yes, I'm insignificant. But I have the ability to change that. It exists within me. And my mother was always telling both my brother and myself the same thing. She would pick up a book and she would say, what edition is this book? And we'd say, third. She'd say, well, you should write the fourth edition. Mm-hmm. She would say, why are you looking at television? She says, if you develop your mind, pretty soon people will be looking at you on television. Why do you want to sit there and just be the passive recipient of environmental influences? And really, the thing that distinguishes people from animals is the tremendous development of our frontal lobes. Animals can only react to their environment. They don't have the ability to process a lot of information and project into the future. And human beings do. And that's where we differ. And yet so many of us tend to give up that right that we have as human beings and tend to act like animals and say, this person or this situation is controlling me and I can't do anything about it. And it's absolutely false.
Are you saying anybody can do it? Is that what this book says?
I'm saying anybody with a normal brain can do it.
I suggest that you have more than a normal brain. Where'd you go to high school?
Southwestern High School.
What kind of marks did you get?
I was an A student until I hit the 10th grade when I fell under the influence of peer pressure. I have a little acrostic for peers, P-E-E-R-S, people who encourage errors, rudeness, and stupidity.
They'd be true in high school.
And they were, you know, telling me I had to wear certain clothes and be seen with certain people. And if I was a young black male, I needed to stay out late and play basketball, or clearly I had some kind of hormonal insufficiency. And as I started listening, my grades started dropping and dropping and dropping. And I didn't care because I was one of the in crowd. But fortunately, over the course of that year, I was able to come to the realization that it wasn't the clothes that were important. It was what one had upstairs and the brain that counted. And then I became an A student again.
And what were your SAT scores, your board scores, may I ask?
I don't remember. I do remember there was an article in the Detroit News that said they were the best that anybody had done in 20 years.
Okay. The brain power was there to begin with. Otherwise, you don't get into Yale. Otherwise, you don't get into the University of Medical School and excel. So my point is, you started out, although you didn't have much in your pocket, you had a lot between both ears.
Well, to a degree, I would agree with that. But keep in mind that when I was in high school, I didn't stop with the curriculum. I would get on the bus, come downtown to Wayne State University, and I would read those books, and I would roam through the galleries of the Detroit Institute of Art. It was my goal to know everything that I possibly could. And with a human brain with over 14 billion cells and connections in it, it is the most sophisticated computer system in the universe. And I think one of the myths that many people have bought into is that the average person can only do average things. But having studied the brain for many years, I know that there's no such thing really as an average brain. The brain is so complex, and it can do so much, and we tap into it so little. And it's just a matter of reorientation.
Well, the brain is your business. You're a neurosurgeon. Do you believe we only use 10% of it?
Some people are fortunate enough to use that much of it, yes.
can you explain an idiot savant, these people who really can't get along with just everyday problems and yet who do such marvelous things?
Well, now these are not people with normal brains. These are people who have significant deficits, physiological, neurophysiological deficits in many portions of their brain, but one portion, for some reason, seems to have increased capacity.
We can't explain that.
We can't explain why that happens, unfortunately.
Tell us the biggest message we can get from your book, Dr. Carson.
Well, the main message is that everybody in life has obstacles. And it really doesn't matter what socioeconomic class or what race you come from. There are going to be problems and obstacles in life. And success is determined by how one faces those obstacles. If one sees them as a containing fence, one goes up to that obstacle and stops. And if one sees it as a hurdle, one goes over it, or under it, or around it, but gets by it. And pretty soon one's looking for obstacles and getting by them. And once one develops that kind of mindset, there's nothing that can stop them. There's no such thing as a good excuse for anything. People who spend a lot of energy complaining and bemoaning situations really are, again, acting like animals. And I'm not saying that problems don't exist, because they do. But like my mother told me when I was a youngster, Carson, if you walk into an auditorium full of bigoted, racist people, she said, you don't have a problem. They have a problem. She says, because when you walk in there, they're all going to cringe and wonder if you're going to sit next to them, whereas you can go in and sit anywhere you want. And I've always remembered that, and I've lived my life that way. And I've said, why not just go ahead and develop your God-given talents? Go ahead and develop perspectives and stop spinning your wheels worrying about things that are insignificant and things that you might not be able to change, and worry about the things that you can do something about.
Makes sense to me. What a pleasure to have met you and talked with you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
The book is called Think Big by Dr. Ben Carson, and it is published by Zondervan,
which is a division of HarperCollins.
You ever get back to Detroit, other than when you plug in your books?
Oh, many times. I get back here about three, four times a year.
Let's talk again.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for being with us.